Welcome to Transformative Talk, Critical Conversations for Teachers. I'm Dr. Zid Haddad, a professor of instruction within the Department of Interdisciplinary Learning and Teaching at the University of Texas at San Antonio. I teach undergraduate and graduate courses in curriculum and instruction. In short, I teach teachers how to teach and save lives through the use of critical multicultural education as an approach to teaching and learning. Our podcast is produced by a different group of graduate students each week, giving them an opportunity to talk about what they're reading in my class, what they experience in the field, and how that impacts their own lives and understandings. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to our podcast from wherever you're listening. Also, you can ask us questions and engage with us further using the anchor.fm website or the anchor.fm app on your phone. You can submit questions and you can also send us voice messages. And remember, please share our podcast on all your socials so that we can build our audience. Thanks for listening, and here's today's episode.
This is Sarah, Sunny, Brooke, and Kelsey, your hosts for this episode of Transformative Talk. In this episode, we are going to talk about modern schools, and we will be referencing Urban and Wagner's 2013 book, American Education, A History, specifically the chapters on the Progressive Era as it relates to our education system today. So to start, we're going to talk about manifest destiny and what that actually means and looks like through a critical lens. Part of our facilitation that we had in our class was an art critique in which we took a look at George A. Crawford's American Progress. Now, the painting is a depiction of the westward expansion and manifest destiny through the historical lens of what looks like to be a white American or a white man. Now, the painting, if you were to take a look at this painting through a conservative lens, you would probably say or kind of analyze it as a positive type of situation where this is usually what happens when you're trying to take over a country and you're trying to really instill this capitalist type of economy and this growth kind of mindset into where you can kind of take over anything and kind of just push any and everybody's existence out of the way. Now, depicted on the left side of this painting is the Native Americans who were already here, living here on this land, and they're pictured kind of marching away, being pushed out of the left side of the painting. Now, this painting is actually from the Library of Congress. It's kind of probably seen in most American history textbooks, but speaking to different classmates that we had in class, it was kind of pretty, the consensus was that once this kind of conversation came up, most of the colleagues were saying that when they talked about this piece or if they saw something like this, the questions that their teachers would ask them were very like, generalized, they kind of glossed over the situation, and they really weren't putting the Native Americans' perspective to the center of the stage. It was more, well, this is what happens, you know, this is just how it is. This is the past. And so really in our conversation, specifically in my group, I wanted to really pose questions that were geared towards critical pedagogy and really, really diving into the types of marginalization that you see in this piece specifically and what that actually meant in terms of how these historical contexts are like celebrated or legitimated in terms of knowledge. And so a lot of the feedback or the topic of discussion that followed that was just that these are the types of conversations that you typically don't see in the classroom because more often so, most educators are kind of afraid to really unpack and digest and kind of dissect these kind of paintings or images or history. And so oftentimes, it's not really something that is brought to anyone's attention. There's nothing wrong with it. And Native Americans, their identity, their culture is kind of left behind. And there's no emphasis on what actually happened to them and how they actually were, you know, pushed out, their identity was pushed out of this country. And so I think overall what I gathered from our conversation was that these types of conversations have to be happening in order for our students to really grapple with, you know, the type of systemic racism that continues to happen in education. When you look at things from a critical lens, you can really, really start to see, you know, all of the different types of discrepancies of that have historically happened over time and how that's still further supported in schools today. I know something that I brought up after our discussion was the fact that someone in my school who was Native American was forced to cut their hair at one point because the school district wasn't allowing them to, allowing boys specifically to have long hair. Now he came back with arguments, well, this is my like culture. This is who I am. I'm Native American. We have long hair. That's who we are. And that's how I've lived my life. My family has lived their life. And so he really stuck to his guns. He went in, took his paperwork to the school board and, you know, said his piece and his made his point. And they said, okay, well, okay. You know, there was really nothing they could do at that point. But after thinking about it, that I was thinking like, here we are, you know, so many years later, we're talking over 100 years and we're still having these issues. Like, why is this an issue? And you know, what does that mean about the types of, you know, systemic racism that like those types of racist acts that are happening still in education, even today? And so we did say that in order to like to have some sort of action for this, conversations need to be happening. There has to be some sort of critical consciousness happening going on in the classroom with these students for them to actually identify these types of problems and form some sort of action against it, because that really what critical pedagogy is. It's making sure that there is some sort of action that is, you know, supported or followed through through these identifying factors or these problems that people see. And so in order to truly engage in humanizing practices and educational reform, we must give our students the opportunities to engage in difficult conversations or discourses that center the historically marginalized population. This painting, like I said, although difficult to dissect or digest, is an example of how these conversations can be approached. And the different methods of acquiring knowledge can significantly challenge the dominant narrative and get students to think about current power dynamics that continue to exist today in social structures. So I think this piece altogether really, really centers how, you know, just unequal, unfair, the opportunity and of, you know, choice and chance and everything that has to do with being here in America. It really is just sad, sad, sad piece to look at. But at the same time, I'm glad we did. I'm glad we took a look at this, because I think this was really a starting point for some people to see, like, you know what, we do need to have these conversations in the classroom. And the facilitation itself, the critique of it, it's like you have to have these heavy loaded or packed questions sometime to really get your students to understand what you're looking at and how that makes them feel and how they can make those changes. So it was a really great conversation. I think that as far as what we can do with it, we can really go different places with it, and we can have our students really, you know, dive into these conversations that they're not having typically in classrooms and in history classrooms or any type of classrooms about systemic racism or racism, historical racism. Brooke, would you like to speak to that in terms of what your group had to say?
Sure. So my group looked at this same piece of artwork. We had four different groups doing so. And our method was to look at modern similarities in a real world tie-in that you would with older students. or maybe even middle grade students. And so I just posed the question to them that as a painting depicting manifest destiny that we hear about in our history classes and the movement of settlers throughout the West and the taking over of the indigenous people's lands, could they see the people, the other teachers in my group, could they see any tie-ins to our systems of education or our world today as Americans where we might be having another manifest destiny moment in America? And so some things, it brought up a lot of feelings, which if you are a teacher and you're leading a discussion like this, you just have to be kind of ready for that. There are going to be a lot of feelings on both sides. And so you'll need to have those discussions with your students ahead of time about, you know, being polite to each group and recognizing other people's points of view. We did agree that that we were all very distressed by the depictions of the indigenous people kind of running away or running from the figure in the middle, which some groups refer to as an angel because she's depicted in all white and she's kind of floating above the whole area. She's holding, we can't tell if it's a Bible or a book, but something that is depicting knowledge. And then she's also got around her arm the telegraph wire. But she's moving towards the indigenous people, and following her are all of the settlers that were coming from the eastern United States at the time. And so we all felt, just as our ancestors did, or as people did during the Victorian era, that maybe the way that we treated these people wasn't the best. And that's how they got back then. And now we are much more certain of that, that the way we all treated the indigenous people was just horrible, especially with what we see today in the news that's happening in Canada and that sort of thing. And then we sort of, it digressed into a discussion about just immigration overall, because we still have people who are fleeing to this country from all over the place. But if that's changing our educational compass here in Texas, especially, and we agreed, a lot of times we hear, as far as immigrants, the same types of rhetoric and the same type of language that they used for the indigenous people. They were savage, or they were not human, or they were dirty, or they were criminals, or all these different labels that we assign to people that have such a negative connotation. And at the same time that we were pushing the indigenous people to farther and farther corners away from their native lands, we're doing that now with immigrants that come in to our state. We're seeing them bused or flown on airplanes to different parts of the country where those areas are not prepared for new arrivals, and there's really no notice about it. And then we hear about it on the news, and it, you know, as a native Texan, I can tell you that it sparks kind of the same anger that I would say the Victorian peoples had when they found out what was going on. That it just seems kind of we're pushing for that same thing again, and we didn't learn very well from our past as far as morals go. Maybe we just learn new ways to disenfranchise marginal groups. And then we also moved on to that there seems to be more of this push, especially in curriculum, of the removal of critical race theory. And that as educators, we understand what critical race theory is, but it seems that the public does not. And the critical race theory that we're talking about is just looking at things from other people's points of view that weren't raised the same way that you were. It has nothing to do with blaming you for what your ancestors did. It's just, I see the world differently. And we're seeing that now with book bannings. We're seeing that now with trying to assimilate students so that they can't use language about other types of sexuality or that sort of thing. Or we are trying to rename what slavery was in this country, and that those those sorts of laws and that push from government and from the outside into education is making having conversations, as Sarah was saying, about paintings like this difficult, because we don't have the language or we don't feel safe in the classroom to have the language and to tell our true story. And in my group in particular, they refer to Lady Liberty in the middle of the painting, the lady dressed all in white floating over the landscape, that behind her, she's spreading sort of this light or from behind her, but whatever she's going into, it's a much darker shade of the painting. You really got to go look, take a look at it to kind of see what we're talking about. But we saw that just sort of as a whitewashing of our curriculum as it is, to just kind of gloss over everything that was bad, maybe about our history, and only teaching the parts where one group or a few groups, not the marginalized groups, feel better about themselves. And that's not a true depiction of history. History is not good or bad. It's just a series of facts. And the only way that we learn from them is by actually having these conversations. So, like I said, it brings up a lot of feelings. So if you're going to teach this, just be prepared for that. But I think, as Sarah said, that it's critical that we have these types of conversations with students. Because if we can't teach students from a young age to see from other people's points of view, if we can't teach students that there are parts of history that everyone's kind of ashamed of, and the reason that we teach it is so that we learn that that was not the best way to do things, and we can do them better now because it's 200 years later and we're seeing similarities, and so that we can have those conversations with older students about how to be able to disagree with someone who has a different point of view respectfully and responsibly, so that everyone has a chance to have their feelings and their backgrounds and their point of view heard, and at the same time to be able to come to a better consensus about what the actual picture represents, that it's not just one group's point of view, but that it depicts different people's points of view depending on where they're standing and where they're coming from. And that's something that we're hoping we gain back as educators moving forward, that we're allowed to teach students how to be better citizens to each other, how to be more kind, and how to have polite and respectful conversations without coming to blows. Sarah, did you want to pick back up from there?
I think those were great conversations that y'all were having. And I think I especially love that y'all were pointing out like just the glossing over of the curriculum. I think that's so true. When we think about curriculum, we don't think about, you know, the sad or the difficult conversations that sometimes people have. And it's almost like, let's just kind of forget that happened, or let's just kind of move past that. And those aren't the types of things that we need to be doing. It's just not fair. And it's not representative of who needs to be represented, the marginalized population. So I thank you so much for your contribution in the discussion, Brooke. We will be back after the break to talk more about the progressive era of education.
Hey, it's Dr. Haddad. Thanks for listening to this episode of Transformative Talk. If you like what you hear, please make sure to subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to us on and leave us a message or send us a comment on the website. We look forward to hearing from you all, and thanks again for listening to Transformative Talk.
Welcome back to this week's Transformative Talk. I'm Sunny, and with me are Sarah, Brooke, and Kelsey, your hosts. We're going to resume our conversation and take it back more to the history and the context of the chapters that we're discussing today, the period of time that we're looking at. We're talking about the progressive era of education. We're using the word modern education in the way that we talk about modern art and modern music occurring in the early 20th century, late 19th century. So that's definitely the period that we're talking about, like from the Reconstruction era through to the end of the First World War. So we had a conversation in our class that really looked at what were the major themes of this era in terms of education, like what were the big influences and how do those influences still play a role in our education today? So we talked a lot about money, leadership, inclusion, and religion as being four major topics that had influence over education then and now. In terms of money, we're talking about funding, we're talking about economics, we're talking about the reasons that schools are founded and how they are able to sustain that, to sustain their practices. So a lot of the schools around that era were transitioning to a position of being funded publicly through Congress and executive branch acts, as well as through state acts. There was also a series of laws that were called land grants, where the government so very generously sold the land of the native peoples in the area and then acquired that land through illegitimate means, and then resold that land partially back to the native people, ironically, and then partially to the highest bidder, and then that money went to go fund education in the area. So that was a way that a lot of schools got money. And that also went into funding Indigenous education, which we'll talk about in a few moments. Both then and now, we also had the practice of tuition-based funding for private schools. And also we had a tradition of religious schools, which again, we'll talk about more, which were funded not through public means, usually through the parish that they were connected to. Today in education, we usually fund our schools through property taxes. There are a couple other ways. The lottery in your state goes towards education, and in some states, cannabis sales also go towards that education. That was a fun fact that we talked about. We still use land grants or funding many things. A lot of schools these days also have endowments. Usually that's at the higher end of education, but that does also occur sometimes in the private education realm for secondary education. Residential schools on Native reservations also still exist and are also federally funded now. So that's the way that money has kind of influenced everything. Leadership through education has also changed a lot. These days, leadership is usually run by the title of superintendent and then run from a government level above that, a state level above that. So superintendents previously required no formal training. Anyone who felt qualified for the job, any gentleman who felt qualified for the job and was charming enough to convince a school board could get that role. But on the other hand, they had very little control over their schools. They worked primarily at the beginning of this era as an administrative aide to teachers. Over the last 100 years, we have seen a shift, a further alienation between leadership and teachers. A professionalization of superintendents. There is now a lot of collegiate, postgraduate education required to attain these roles. Of course, now we allow women to be superintendents, but we often see a gender divide between the leadership of schools, which is often very male dominated, and the practice of teaching, which is often very female dominated. So that is a trend that has persisted over the last 100 years. Inclusion has been a challenging topic for all of the history of education. At the beginning of this era, we saw schooling maybe not exclusive to, but catered to the needs and interests of mainly white middle-class boys. And as education has become democratized over the last 100 years, and as the country has been democratized and changed in some ways, we're seeing a higher increase of, well, I mean, we're seeing everybody go to school. Whether that school is catering to their needs is a different question. So We see an increase in schools being more culturally responsive, more open and accepting of women, of people of different races, of queer people, of individuals with disabilities, which was simply not an option at the time that we're originally talking in the progressive era. But I think we still have a long way to go in regards to truly meeting the needs and designing education spaces for those people, not just having them included in their in the room, having their needs actually being met. Our last topic was religion. Like I mentioned before, Catholic schools and other religious schools existed and were to some degree popular within their own groups. The goal of the Catholic Church for a period was to have every single child, every single Catholic child go to a Catholic school, but they never reached that level of popularity. They also never received the public funding, which they advocated for. Today we have, I would say, a much stronger on paper divide, ironically, between church and state. Like, we have more laws that regulate that and more of a cultural norm. At the same time, we're also seeing an increase in the current day of religion, individuals really trying to push that boundary between religion and state. And so we see a really big trend, especially here in Texas, with individuals trying to include prayer in schools, we talked recently about a story of chaplains being considered as counselors for school. So rather than paying a school counselor, which we all agree is a very essential part of education, specifically today in public schools, rather than paying for a counselor, bringing in a chaplain to serve that role, even though, as we've discussed, that is not the same, there's not an equivalent service being provided. Bills are proposed all the time here in Texas for changes to be made to that. There's also perhaps the word is subliminal, way in which we teach, which definitely encourages, there's definitely a perspective within our educational culture, which is a Protestant individualist understanding of morality, which takes place and is culturally taught within our schools, even though it is not part of the written curriculum. Religion definitely still plays a role in education today, perhaps even more so than it did earlier in the century. So those are kind of all the big topics that we talked about. And as we're talking about this transition from past to present and what school looks like today, we had a couple of questions for our classmates, which we talked about at the end of class. Kelsey, did you want to talk about the next topic?
Sorry. Yes, so as we went into discussions talking about what era are we really in the educational world, or in, honestly, in society, because they're kind of intertwined, because, you know, you go to school to be educated, to go out into the real world and make your own decisions, like politically, religiously, and just overall, like your moral compass, right? So we looked into what kind of era would we call this era that we are now in. And what we've come to discuss more is that we aren't in necessarily an era that we've ever really, you know, been in before. We've never really experienced exactly what we're experiencing now, because every part of history is going to have its own like changes as time goes on. And so we pose the question, are we in some kind of, you know, neo-progressive era? And that question was actually like torn on a few different sides. One perspective was, yeah, we're in a neo-progressive era. It's kind of like we're being progressive and we're trying to make change to, you know, the laws that are happening now And we're kind of like, you know, standing up for what we think is right. Right. However, the other side, another side pointed out the part that we don't have people just accepting these changes happening or that these people want to make change happen, but rather we're being met in the opposition and not just in a way like I disagree with what you're talking about. It's more of an aggression towards the individual rather than their perspective. So we saw this a lot, you know, with the elections that happened the last like in 2016 and then just as of like the most recent election, we saw people divided over an individual and like what the individual stood for, and also like the different ideals of that individual. And we didn't meet it with, well, my views are different than yours and that's okay. But we saw a more common trend of people being like, your views are wrong. And that's all I have to say about that. And it was almost like they were in this echo chamber of, there's all these other people that also think the same thing as me. So I'm going to say what I believe to be right. And I have people that back me up. Like, clearly, if I'm seeing all this stuff that is, you know, for my side, then I must be right. But we forget that humans tend to seek out affirmative opinions rather than ones that discredit them or ones that are in the opposition. And that's just a natural human thing. Like, we try to find more commonalities between individuals and between our ideals rather than differences. And so that carried on into our educational system where people were divided over their politics or over the way that they wanted to raise their kids, over the way they wanted to live their lives, what they wanted to learn. And instead of going at it in a way that would be constructive to like help one another, we went in a direction of aggression and divide. And that's why we as a group, Brooke, Sunny, Sarah and I, we've come to this agreement that like this wasn't a neo-progressive era that we're in. We're in a pro-aggressive era where it's okay to speak out, not just speak out, sorry. It's not only acceptable to just speak out about what you don't believe in, but it's also okay to attack others that are not of the same opinion as you. And then even if your opinion may be the one that will make the society more livable and like more accepting of people that are different than us, especially these outsiders, these people that are coming across the border, these that are seeking asylum, for God's sakes. Like, if we could even like take that into consideration, the era that we're in wouldn't be aggressive. It would be neo-progressive. But until we've made that shift in our focus and our understandings of, you know, really what are we doing, we're never going to get to that neo-progressive era. It's going to stay this pro-aggressive era until we make some serious changes. And that needs to start off with, you know, if you're in the school system, your subordinates and the people above you need to be on the same page, and we don't need to have this divide within the schools. It's okay to have different opinions. It's okay to have different politics, but it's not okay to attack one another or ostracize one another for those beliefs.
I so agree with you there, Kelsey, that that it just goes back to harking on something else that came out in this era, the progressive era originally in the Victorian age, the idea of kindergarten that we borrowed from Germany, and just all the lessons that we teach in kindergarten and that we, you know, that are really at the heart of kindergarten, learning to share, learning to take your turns, learning to listen, all those things. It just seems like all of those things we have lost. And perhaps it was because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Perhaps it was because of lockdown. We don't know and we can't say, but we can definitely say that in the past about 10 years, since we've all been hooked to our phones and sort of the social media thing, we get more and more opinions that sound just like ours, and we get less and less of other people's. And that leads to this sort of buildup of aggression in us, and the inability to see other people's points of view, because we don't have to look them in the face when we say things. We don't have to see their reaction. And we need to get back to some of the things that the actual progressive era was trying to teach us, that it was trying to teach us that we can have some reforms in government, and at the same time, it doesn't have to be overwhelming in our lives, that we can have two different points of view as long as we can talk about it and find middle ground. But until we're at that point, that just makes it really difficult. I wanted to speak to, there was an issue in the Atlantic back in April of 2022 that mentions in the past 10 years that we've been uniquely stupid. It talks about how it's this bringing up of social media and that sort of thing, and how it's sort of dividing us today. And because we only see our own points of view. And during this time in the progressive era, it was right before and then right after World War I, and how we dealt with those big changes in our lives. Suddenly, before World War I, we had our battles, but it was within our own borders and it was within our own country. And then World War I, we stepped out on the bigger stage and we came back wanting to hold on to what made us American and get rid of anything that was anti-American. And we were very much wanting to define what anti-American was. And the more we see of other countries, the more we experience that through social media or however we do today, the more we're still trying to define what's American and what is not. And the sad thing is for the students that we teach, that even if we don't want our own children to see what is happening somewhere else in the world, we want their childhood to be happy. We want them to grow up feeling safe. We don't want them to know about racism or sexism or any other isms or ideals out there that might make them feel like they're not a full person. They still experience it either way. We can, you know, we can talk all we want outside the classroom about what we think is best. But in the classroom, our job as educators is the fundamental kindergarten principles. We have to start teaching children and youth again how to be able to have conversations with each other. And that's just something kind of at the core. I was told a long time ago when I started my teaching career that you don't teach the subject, you teach people. And I think that's something that, or I hope that that's something that that society remembers about our field and how precious it is, that we are here to teach other people just how to be good human beings and to have conversations that aren't easy, that are sometimes difficult, and to prepare them for doing that properly in their lives, to question social media when it comes to them, to question their sources, to stand by their own beliefs, but acknowledge that other people may not have those. And so those are just some of the things that that we're hoping that you kind of got from this podcast today, and that you feel is maybe a light in the darkness for you about what the teachers are feeling and about how we're hoping our very niche field moves forward. If you want to learn more about this topic, please check out Urban and Wagner's 2013 book titled American Education History. Our chapters that we specifically talked about with our groups were on the progressive era. There's also, like I mentioned, an article from The Atlantic, April 11th, 2022, by Jonathan Haidt, H-A-I-D-T, about misinformation and how that's leading us today. And we hope that you join us next time, or our class next time, to hear more about teachers in the classroom and how we're having transformative talks. Thanks.